We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to our number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. The federal poverty threshold for a family of four today stands at a little over $22,000. Now, what that means, what the government says it means, is that families that are below that level are considered to be lacking the resources to meet the basic needs for healthy living. But here's the question. What exactly does that number tell us? How is it determined? And should we expect that people who are close to but above that line are, in fact, able to meet their basic needs? Well, these are some of the questions we'll try to talk about here this morning in this part of Focus 580, and particularly try to look at some of the challenges faced by the working poor, people who are employed and who are making enough money, have enough income to get them over the line, over the poverty line, but who are still close. And our guest for this hour of Focus 580 is Margaret Stapleton. She is a senior attorney with the Shriver Center. This is the Sergeant Shriver National Center on Poverty Law, and they're in Chicago, and they indeed have a website, and if you'd like to go and find out more about them, you can go and take a look at it. She has 35 years of experience practicing welfare and civil rights law, and at the Shriver Center, she focuses on a number of things, including public benefits and health care and child support. She serves on the Illinois Department of Health and Human Services Social Service Advisory Committee and Food Stamp Participation Advisory Committee, also the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services Child Support Advisory Committee. And she's been doing this kind of work for quite a long time. She's joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, questions are certainly welcome. The number 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. So at any point here, questions are certainly welcome. We ask people to be brief so we can get as many callers in as possible, but questions are welcome as long as they're focused on the topic. We're happy to hear from people. So again, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Ms. Stapleton, hello.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me to speak with you.
I think that that where we started on this and thinking about having this conversation, I think it did start with poverty statistics and the way that we talk about poverty and the way that we try to quantify it. And I think the question we had, and we can try to talk about this in a number of ways, but I think the basic question really is, does this, you know, when we talk about the poverty line and we talk about the people who are below it and the people who are a little bit above it, what does that really tell us? And does that really tell us the whole story?
I can tell you that it doesn't tell you the whole story. You know, the federal poverty guidelines or the poverty measures or whatever you want to, you know, call them, were based on a formula developed in the 60s, and it's been updated for cost of living to some extent, but it really talks about cash income that people have, and it doesn't talk about other supports from the state, local, or federal governments to families, and that's one of its downsides. It's one of the things that people criticize. People also criticize the fact that it really doesn't take into account the fact that the basic needs of individuals and families have really kind of changed in the proportion of the pie, you know, that people need for basic things. For example, people now spend substantial amounts on housing, substantially more on housing in utilities than they did even 20 years ago, or even 15 years ago, or even 10 years ago, if you're talking about electric rates in southern Illinois, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the federal poverty guidelines are useful in that they have been in place for, you know, going on 50 years now, I guess. And they measure, and so they're very good for comparing, you know, how things, you know, kind of the ebb and flow of well-being of people, or kind of relative well-being of people. But they don't really measure real well-being of individuals or families. I mean, the 2009 figures, you probably saw, you know, in August, early September of each year, the Census Bureau puts out the figures, and people pay a great deal of attention to them because they, you know, they want to know whether things are getting better or for worse. And, you know, the poverty rate went up in Illinois this year, which is no surprise. Went up someplace here on my desk. I have the figure. But it went up by a percentage point. It's 12.2 percent in, meaning 12.2% of the people in Illinois, according to the Census Bureau, are living in households with income under the poverty level. That's up a full percentage point from 2007, which was the last time they did the analysis. So it gives us a way of kind of relatively comparing how things are going. But people who, government officials, statisticians, economists, political parties, I think everyone is in agreement that the federal poverty level if a person is making, their household is making over the federal poverty level, they're not doing just dandy. And if they're under it, they're in very deep trouble. People do agree that if you're under it, you are in pretty serious trouble. So there are a number of other, kind of measures that are under discussion. The National Academy of Science has measures. Different not-for-profit groups have measures. They talk about sustainable living. They talk about making ends meet. But the basic thing is that the federal poverty level's main function, at least at this point in time, is to give us a consistent temperature reading for people. And that's its benefit.
That
was a very long answer. I won't do that again.
No, that's fine. No, I think I appreciate the thoughtfulness and the thoroughness of it. I just want to put again one more number out here, just so people will have something more to grab onto. So, as you said, in Illinois, the poverty rate, and this is for the most recent year that we would have, so that would be 2008, was 12.2%, and right, that's more than 1.5 million people, more than 525,000 children. So just again, so for those people to say, well, what exactly does that mean, 12.2%? That's what it means.
Right.
It's more than 1.5 million people. What is the dollar figure? And again, you know, we can talk about whether that is or is not something useful. But if we say, people talk about the poverty line, like we draw a line, you know, and if you're above, you're okay, and if you're below, you're not. And of course, that's really,
it might be good with temperature.
Yeah, but with something like this, it's totally different.
98.6.
But so now where, and also it's the same for all of the contiguous 48
right,
states. It's the
right,
same number. So that also doesn't really take into account the fact that, you know, your cost of living and all sorts of things are really going to be different from one place to the next. But as you say, the purpose really is so that we can have, so we can see trends overall.
Well, that's what I think most people use it for. I mean, people will quibble with you about that, or, you know, dispute that.
Yeah. So what now is the benchmark? People say, okay, family of four. What's now the number?
It's been right as of 2009. For a family of four, is $22,050.
So just a hair over $22,000.
Yeah.
And if so, that also means that then there will be people who, and we really don't talk about the fact that there will be people who are working, mm-hmm. so they're not counted as unemployed, who are making more than $22,050, who are not considered poor, but you know, you have to ask, well, if you're at 100, say you're at 125% of poverty, so instead of making $22,000, you've got $33,000. Well, that's, you know, still that's for a family of four, that's not a whole lot of money. And when you consider, as you said, cost of living and cost of health care and cost of everything else, then you really have to ask about how it is where it is we draw that line, you know, and what really that means. And what the challenges are like for people who are close to but above the line.
Well, I think there are that public officials and people in general agree that you know, family of four is going to have a very hard time getting by on $22,000 a year. And pay for everything that they need. And, I mean, these are not luxuries. It's paying for food. It's paying for, you know, housing, electricity, transportation, clothing, and, you know, all those things that particularly, you know, probably in Illinois most recently, you know, kind of housing and utilities are big eaters of people's money. And so what's in place in Illinois and in most states are a number of things that we talk about these things. We call them work supports. They are different, essentially, government programs that are available or subsidies or whatever that, you know, depending on how it's structured, that help people who are working who aren't getting any cash assistance from the... you know, the state, local, or federal government, but still need some kind of assistance to lead a decent life. I mean, here at the Shriver Center, we talk about people having a good life, not the good life, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that is, you know. I'm revealing my prejudice, you know, golf, you know, country clubs and, you know, lots of vacations, but a good life, you know, so that you can have a good life. And so in Illinois, we have a number of programs in place that help individuals and families, I mean, and in other states too. I mean, for example, the food stamp program, which is and it's now called Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's got a new acronym, SNAP. But it is in place to give people, you know, essentially a debit card. You know, a debit card that is uploaded monthly with an amount of money that you can use to purchase food at grocery stores and farmers markets and places like that. Basically, people under about 135% of the federal poverty level would be eligible for SNAP, mm-hmm. stamps as we used to call it. The rolls have been growing greatly in this recession. There's an article, front page of the New York Times over the weekend about the very substantial growth in the number of people who are beneficiaries of the food stamp program and about people's kind of changing attitudes because they see how much difference it makes in the well-being of their family if they actually have enough money for food. So the food stamp program is a big income support. Things like child care assistance or child care subsidies. Obviously, if you need to go to work and you have a young child or even a school-age child who's, you know, not yet a teenager in high school, if you're at work, they shouldn't be on their own. And so Illinois subsidizes child care up to 50%. Maybe I have the number wrong here, so I'm not going to say it. But up to, they don't even talk about the poverty level. They talk about up to a percentage of the state median income, which is another, you know, kind of support. The earned income tax credit is kind of a different formula, but lower income people who are working can actually get cash back from the federal and the state government. Mm-hmm. To subsidize. It's really, there, you know, a number of, and then, of course, health care. You know, for in Illinois, we have the All Kids Program. Every child in Illinois can get health care, can get coverage under the All Kids program. The higher your income, the more you're going to pay in premiums. But if you're under about 185% of the federal poverty level, you're not going to pay anything. So, I mean, there are a lot of supports there that help people, help the working poor. And those are very important programs. And the federal food stamp program is, you know, in pretty good shape. It's funded by the federal government. The other programs are always a little iffy. And the General Assembly has done pretty well at not cutting. The General Assembly and the governor are not cutting health care for children or cutting child care subsidies. But they're very vulnerable. You know, there's a lot of money, federal fiscal relief to the states that helped with both of those things.
Well, that I think just that given what we know about the state's fiscal condition, one has to wonder about these kinds of programs, particularly if there are more and more people who are qualifying for them and who really need the help. Is there some danger that the money to pay for them won't be there?
Yes. There's always...
In a word, yes.
As I said, the federal food stamp, now called SNAP program, is 100%. The benefits are 100% federal money.
Yeah.
And so, on some level, the state is really interested in having people get on SNAP, quote, get on SNAP, because it helps Illinoisans, it helps their local economies. You know, people who have money to buy groceries, go to the grocery store, and then you have the whole multiplier effect, as the economists say, about spending. You know, store clerks and delivery people, everybody that's in that the production and delivery side of the food chain are kept employed. You know, so food stamps are a really important kind of thing, but other things, the other things that I talked about, the state earned income tax credit, the child care subsidies, which are a blend of state and federal money, but there's a substantial amount of state money, general revenue money going into that. Those are always vulnerable to the Illinois, challenging revenue scene. You know. It'll be, and we think that the next year's budget is going to be, projections are, I think I saw someplace like $12 billion shortfall in fiscal year 2011. I hope no one quotes me on these figures.
I think you're certainly in the ballpark. In fact, I think it might be slightly more than that. I'm thinking that it might actually be over $13 billion, but maybe I'd better not. I don't want to be quoted either. It's really obvious that it's a very, very big number.
Right.
And how we deal with this, I think, would be expected to be maybe the biggest issue. You know, we're going to elect a new governor next year, so it's going to be the biggest issue, I think. Both the two leading Democratic candidates have said they think that we need a tax increase. I think we've got 7 Republicans that are going to be in the primary, and none of them have said that they think we need a tax increase. So it remains to be seen what they're going to be saying about how we deal with the problem. But there's no denying that there is a problem, and it's a big problem.
Well, you know, I think it's you didn't ask me a question, but that won't stop me.
Please go ahead.
You know that I think that it's extremely important that the candidates and the eventual elected officials be a lot more straight with the people of Illinois and stop, I don't have the right word, but it's sort of like, you know, stop doing this kind of bashing, you know, about Illinois. Illinois' income tax rates are among the lowest in the country. Illinois' taxes in general are among the lowest. Kind of quite low in comparison with other states. Illinois has fewer state employees per capita than most states. You know, and yet you have people running for public office who sort of talk as if the state of Illinois is sort of some ravenous bloated beast, and it's not a ravenous bloated beast. It's actually a very emaciated beast, and we see that in many ways. We've been kicking the pension payments down the line. We've been outsourcing and privatizing to some extent things that in many ways ought to be public functions. You know, this is a kind of an aside here, but you know, Illinois over the last 20 years or so, has contracted out a lot of state human services to good organizations, you know, big charitable organizations, the big church organizations, you know, Catholic Charities, Lutheran, Jewish, whatever, you know, to provide social services and to many, many good community-based organizations that then provide, let me just use one example, home health services and to seniors to help them live in their homes, you know. And then those employees of those organizations are not state employees. They're employees of the intermediary contractor. And they're, in general, they're not paid very well. I was at a public hearing a couple of years ago, and this very poignant fact came out. You know, the people who take care of elderly people in their homes, kind of homemaker, light nursing, you know, people, you know, often women in their 40s and 50s, they're paid an hourly wage, they have no benefits, and they have no health care insurance at that point. Mm-hmm. Now, that's been kind of in the process of changing, but Illinois has it's doing a lot of its services on the cheap.
And I'm sure this is something that has gotten coverage, and we have tried to talk about, even going back to last summer when we were involved in a project trying to look at what was going on in some of the communities here within our area, that these kinds of agencies that you're talking about, the social service agencies, are really very hard-pressed because the amounts of money that they're getting from the state have been cut. So they're forced to try to do the same job or continue to try to do the job with less money. And, of course, we also know that the state is significantly behind in paying its bills. So even promised money has not come. And I'm sure that there are a lot of places that are wondering, well, how can they even continue to operate if the state won't pay them what the state owes?
Yes. You got it. It's one of the kind of quiet disasters in Illinois. You know, Illinois is not alone in this. I mean, other cases that are other states are having similar problems. But you know, when a social service agency in Macoupin County lays off 5 people, it doesn't get the press that the state of Illinois laying off X people. You know, people say, well, I think that there's a kind of a, I think the people of Illinois, and I've put myself in this in that pot, you know, there's a degree to which the way services are provided is so unclear to people that we don't really appreciate, I mean, you know, how bad things are. If we closed down the state police, people would notice, you know. Or if we closed down, I live in Chicago, so if we closed down the Chicago Police Department, people would notice that fast, you know. But we don't really notice when, you know, home health aides or you know, in southern Illinois, I mean, the child care centers are closing because their payments are delayed, because they're losing customers or clients, you know, because people who lose their jobs no longer need childcare. You know, so we have this kind of serious downward, the anti-multiplier effect, you know, the kind of divider effect going on. But we need to kind of keep our eye on the big picture and all those implications, you know. That's why I'm hoping that Congress, which has a lot, United States Congress, which has a lot on its plate, does go ahead with another stimulus. We need it. We need a jobs bill, you know, because, you know, people who want to work and aren't working, their talents are just being wasted. You know, they're still breathing air and drinking water and eating to some extent, so they really need to, you know, those people want to work. And so we need to, you know, if Congress can come up with a jobs bill. I think they're considering, they're in the process of putting one together now, so that will be helpful. But
let me introduce again our guest for this hour, and I have a caller who's been patient with us, and we'll get to them. Margaret Stapleton is a senior attorney with the Sargent Shriver National Center on Poverty Law in Chicago. She has 35 years of experience practicing welfare and civil rights law, and at the Shriver Center, she focuses on a number of things, including public benefits and health care and child support. We're talking this morning about, we started out talking about poverty and how it is we try to quantify it, what we mean when we talk about the poverty line, how the, a little bit about how those numbers are derived and why they matter, and particularly about some of the supports that are available for people who are not only below but who are above, close to the line but above. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have a caller. Here's someone, again, who's been patient, so we'll talk with him in Elgin. Line 4 on the toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks, Dave. You guys are right on the money. I think the middle income, what she said earlier, if we had jobs, we wouldn't have this problem. We're losing lots of jobs to other countries. And it could solve a lot of problems in this country. The more jobs we have, the more people can afford to buy their own insurance. You know, hence, you wouldn't have to go through all the stuff that they're doing now and rely on the government solely for their support. And that's what's happening. We're turning into a welfare type country. And I'm a good example. I used to make $80,000 a year. You know what I'm making this year? 15. And the reason why is because people have chose to go out of the country. People I know that I used to work with can't afford my services anymore. So then I'm trying to rely on going back to school and doing oddball things for people. And I'm a contractor. Dave's heard me. I'm a regular caller. We've got a crisis on our
loyal caller.
Well, you know, I love this show because it brings out a lot of stuff that other shows won't do. So I try to support it every way I can. So, I mean, whatever little money I do have, I try to, you know, give to them too. But the point is that I'm trying to make here is that, you know, my wife, she's working. Thank God for that. But middle income, I want to say it's going from, it used to be $20,000. Now it's upwards in the middle 50s somewhere. It keeps rising. And I don't understand why the politicians don't see this. You know, you can't blame the people because everybody wants to work. I don't want to rely on government. It's cheaper for me not to work. I mean, the way the government talks, the way they want you to do it, to go collect unemployment, than it is for me to go to work. You know, what sense is that? You know, let's do something to straighten the welfare system out. I mean, and it goes right back to the jobs again. Let's do something about this country. Because I have to tell you, my house is going up for sale because I'm paying, you know, 10 to 12 grand a month in my property tax. This is what I was going to bring back. Taxes are killing me. If I make $50,000 a year, like I was, I'm paying $30,000 in taxes. You know, so you're paying two-thirds of the year, you're paying your income to somebody else. That doesn't make any sense. You know, it doesn't help us as an American society. It's like we work hard for everything, but yet we're giving the money away to somebody else who doesn't deserve it. But anyway, that's my 10 cents, I guess. Thank you.
All right. Well, you can react, Ms. Stapleton. You can react to that any way that you like.
Well, first, I'm very sympathetic to the caller. I mean, I think that this recession is extremely difficult on people, and you know, as he was speaking, I was thinking of another kind of a subset of issues here, which is in which he I think really identified is that, you know, the need for people to support with their dollars in purchasers and you know, hiring people in their own communities. You know, the idea that and I know this is sort of a hot topic with some people, but, you know, going to a local store, a local drugstore rather than a chain, hiring a local contractor rather than doing whatever, you know, kind of thing of supporting with your spending the people who live in your town, who live in your community, and being willing to pay a decent price for what they're providing. I mean, I think that's one of the challenges. We've sort of been told that we're stupid if we don't get the very best deal we could possibly get. You know, but the very best deal that we could possibly get probably means that the employer or the business that's giving us that very best deal is not paying his or her employees very well and is not providing them with benefits. You know, so it's really, I think people need to be kind of thoughtful in the old way, kind of about their purchasing and where they buy and what they buy and who they buy it from in terms of sustaining their own communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when I, you know, and as I said, I think we've, you know, there is a degree to which people kind of think they have to, I mean, I suppose Black Friday is an example of that. You know, people have to go out and get the very best deal, and if you didn't get it. But I think people might be better off shopping in their, you know, in their main streets and in their community areas instead of in the mass markets.
Well, let's talk with some other folks. Loda is the next caller here. It's toll-free line 4. Hello. Yeah,
thank you. I'd like to ask Ms. Stapleton if she has a sense or maybe even some hard data on the percentage of the total support for the poor that comes from churches and other non-governmental sources.
You know, that's a really, forgive me for this, that's a really good question. I don't. You know, I don't have that figure, and it and I think it's substantial. But I don't, but in 21st century, you know, America, the churches and philanthropic organizations, which are very, you know, which do very good work and probably cannot bear the full burden the way maybe they did more in the 18th century. But I don't have that figure, and I'm sorry. I don't know.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. I wonder if anybody has that figure. It sounds that actually might be not an easy, not that it would be impossible to come up with that figure, but that it actually might not be very easy because I'm sure we're actually talking about a very large number of organizations if you're really going to try to get a complete picture.
Well, I think that's true. I also think that I'm going to really speak about Illinois because I'm not fluent in the situation in other areas, but the major denominations in Illinois, the Lutherans, the Catholics, the Jewish Federation, operate with state funds in a lot of the programs that they provide. A substantial amount of the services that are provided by those organizations are paid for with state dollars. You know, those organizations also get, you know, very generous contributions from their congregations and members. But it isn't, and I'm sure their bookkeeping will reflect which is which. But the churches that are doing the good work, religious organizations that are doing, and philanthropic organizations that are doing that good work are, you can't assume that it's all charitable gifts from their memberships.
So I think that's interesting. So you think that maybe to the extent to which people are aware at all of who it is that's doing this work, taking care of people who are disadvantaged and need help, that people aren't, again, I suppose this goes back to this point we made, people aren't aware of the fact that, yes, if this is non-governmental organizations that are doing the work, that they're actually doing it with public money.
Yes, that's right.
So I'm sure that they also rely on contributions.
It varies from organization to organization. Uh-huh. It's probably a very good thing. I mean, it's because they're organizations that are skilled at what they do, and they know the problems, you know, and they're trusted. It's true of religious organizations. It's also true of community-based organizations, you know, that people know to go there when they're in trouble. So that this is a workable and fine construct, I guess, but it's not that they're doing the work entirely with the charitable donations of their members.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk with someone in Urbana. This is line one. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes.
Well, something else you might study, I've had an intuitive sense for quite some time that sales taxes are most regressive, most harmful, most onerous to people with the low incomes, because it's a tax on things that they have to spend money on, you know, humdrum things, the light bulbs, underwear, and clothing, and of course food, and of course the state's nice, they only hitch up a little bit of tax on food anymore and things like that. But if you would talk about the how that affects the poor, and I personally think a good solution would be a complete restructuring of how the state, local, and county governments get their funds, which, if it were up to me, would be entirely through progressive income taxes, which are, you know, would be based on a person's ability to pay versus, you know, their income versus, you know, tapping them every time they go someplace and want to buy a pair of shoelaces. So if you would comment on that, please. Thank you.
All right. Can you do that?
I agree very much with the caller from Urbana. You know, that you're absolutely right that sales taxes are about as regressive as anything you could think of. And that would be if I ran the world or the state, that would be a primary thing of that needs reform. And it's complicated because, you know, Illinois has so many taxing bodies, you know, and so many, so counties, a lot of the money goes to the county, a lot of the sales tax money goes to state, to local governments. They don't have the ability to do income taxes. They don't trust the state to give them a share of an income tax, you know, their share. But it surely is absolutely correct that the sales tax is very regressive, and it creates a lot of troubles for people who live near the lines. You know, I mean, they talk about, you know, I happen to live in the Chicago area, and, you know, Indiana is right there and Wisconsin is right there. They have lower gasoline taxes and lower sales taxes than Illinois, and people believe that lots of people who live within an easy drive of those two states do most of their purchasing out of state rather than in state, which has its kind of its downside. But sales tax is a daunting amount of money, particularly if you live in Cook County, which is, I guess, the highest in the universe, maybe? No.
I shouldn't laugh. You shouldn't be laughing. We have some other callers here. We have about 10 minutes left. Maybe, again, I should introduce again the guest, Margaret Stapleton. She is a senior attorney with the Shriver Center. This is the Sergeant Shriver National Center on Poverty Law. It's in Chicago. She has 35 years of experience practicing welfare and civil rights law, and focuses at the Center on Public benefits and health care and child support, among other things. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, and on to Champagne in line two. Hello.
Hi, coming late. Just wanted to ask before my comment, what was the actual topic of the show? Because I came in about 15 minutes ago.
Well, it was a little free-floating. I think actually what we started out doing was we said we wanted to try to talk about how it is we talk about poverty, how it is the poverty line is calculated, where it is, how many people there are, what some of the trends are, but also to try to talk about, sort of to ask this question, is that number useful at all? I mean, what really does it tell us? And does it really tell the whole story? And I think really the first question I asked, kind of a rhetorical question of a guest, I said something like, well, if you talk about poverty statistics, you talk about the poverty line, is that really the whole story? And she said, well, no, it's not. So I guess we have been trying to talk about what the reality is of people who are living around the margins, whether they're actually officially considered to be poor and they're below the line, or maybe they're above and they're working and so they're employed, so they're not counted as unemployed. They're above the line, so they're not counted as poor, and yet people who are at that point, we know now more and more people are having a very difficult time. And so the question is, well, you know, what are some of the realities? And also we've talked about what are some of the programs that are available to try to help people like that, but also pointing out that those kinds of programs are under a lot of pressure, particularly if they're funded by the state.
Okay. Because my first thought in regards to that is I recently heard a factoid, and I forget which evening WILL show it was, talking about how some recent pundit referred to as people making $100,000 or more as middle class. And this factoid is that only 5% of the people in the United States qualify for that. So they are in no way the middle class. And I think people need to always be aware of that, that when you hear media, even the fine media we have on AM 580, that you have to be very careful to try to understand what the statistic is that you're actually hearing. And speaking of which, on one of the fine shows on AM 580 this weekend, I believe it was Bob McChesney's show, but I'm not sure, somebody was talking about federal food aid versus private aid, and your guest today has made it very clear what people don't understand. Federal aid and state aid is a huge part of private charity care, regardless of all the myths that are out there. And they pointed out that charitable food just from private sources is a very small fraction compared to, say, the federal food aid program, which is mainly food stamps, but there are others. And therefore, if the federal food aid program was cut by even 3%, it would totally wipe out any benefit from private giving. And I think people need to remember that when we're talking about something that is a substantial fraction of the federal government, the private charitable giving is just not going to be able to compensate for that. And that was my response to the caller from Loda, and I'll let you folks get on with the show.
Thank you. Well, thank you. You can, I don't know if you want to add anything to that or comment on that?
Well, just to sort of, I suppose, repeat myself, is that I think that it's incumbent on us, is the people of Illinois, and I love the phrase, the people of Illinois, to get smarter about our government and about those kinds of issues. And not that we need to wander around with, you know, statistics in our back pocket all the time, but just to have kind of a better kind of overview of, you know, what's at issue and what the situation is. I mean that because we have a danger to form, and I suffer from this a lot, and I try to get up in the morning and say, don't jump to conclusions again. But let me just give you an example. I heard a fact the other day at a political campaign debate, And one of the candidates said, you know, who was he asked about the pensions, the state pensions, which are so big, and would you cut them, and, you know, would you renege on these things? And he said, no, I'm not going to renege on our promises to the teachers, you know. And then he said, you know, the average teacher's pension is in the 30,000 dollars, you know, and they have 32, 34, something like that, you know, which is a lot of money, but it is not a lot of money, you know. And because I think if you had asked me, what do you think a teacher's pension is? I just said, I don't know, 50, 60,000, you know, two-thirds of what, I don't know. You know, but I didn't know the figure. I didn't know it. And I think it's incumbent on us to you know, when we're having these very, and we're going to be having very serious discussions in Illinois for a number of years about state finance and what kind of a state we want to be, you know, and, you know, how we're sharing responsibility with each other and in our government, that we actually do do some drilling down and getting some facts. And, you know, there's just, God bless the World Wide Web and God bless Google, because you can really find a lot of stuff that you wouldn't know, you mm-hmm. know.
All right, let's talk with someone in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Our governor, the one in jail, actually his $60,000 one is going to be cut, or, you know, he's not going to get it. But I think the politicians seem to be making out okay. But anyway, that's not the focus. You were talking about the local, you know, that kind of thing. And that it was like the banks. The banks were actually initially, especially state charter banks, were meant to help the community. And what happens is that, you know, many of those loans are turned over to investors and all that kind of stuff. And when they have trouble, of course, then the investors want their money. But one thing that tied into that was in terms of taking advantage of the poor. There was a wonderful program on Frontline about the card game, talking about the credit card industry. But years ago, how two individuals developed were very creative and figuring out, you know, getting credit cards to the poor. And, you know, it's 500, you know, you could, you know, your limit was $500, you know, zero base and all. But the whole strategy is to keep them on that for years, you know. And the other ways around it were that the special, you know, the interest rates, you have to, you know, how much. But if you had these special charges for this and that, that didn't have to be, and a lot of people didn't realize how much they were paying. But anyway, I was really aggravated in terms of, and this has been going on for years. But any comment, whatever, I'll just hang up here.
Okay. Well, again, you can comment that on that any way you think you can.
Well, I think that the caller is really zeroing in on, you know, kind of a phenomena of the last maybe 30 years in both federal policy and in state policy, that again we're told that business will figure it out, and that if we don't regulate businesses, the competition will keep everything fair and keep everything going. Well, that pretty clearly isn't true, you know, that we're living in a couple of years now, and probably a few decades, that, you know, that competition didn't drive down prices on credit cards, and, you know, just put more and more people into bigger debt. So I think that there really is a need for, you know, and a lot of people don't like the idea of regulation, but the opposite of regulation is unregulation, and we have a lot of evidence out there about unregulated. Illinois didn't have a cap on interest rates. We repealed the usury statutes decades ago, you know, as if things would be fine. And then we have people paying 20, 30, and these payday loans, 100% interest. I mean, outrageous.
We're almost at the point that we're going to have to stop. I guess I find myself going back to this. We talked earlier about the fact that in the state of Illinois, the poverty rate for the most recent year we have, which was last year's 12.2%, and that's more than 1.5 million people. And we talked about the fact that there are support programs that are available to try to help people who are below that line, below the line, or slightly above the line, and it, you know, depends on what your income is. And I'm sure that there are more. The numbers of people who are looking for help have gone up. I guess I find myself wondering, and you know, maybe this is enough for another program, whether in fact the people who actually need the help can get it? Do they know where to go? And you know, are the means testing, does that really work? In the sense that, are there people who maybe actually could use the help, but somehow the numbers say that they're not supposed to need it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's actually, we could spend another show on this, another program on that. You know, let me just give you an example. Illinois, like every state, has a program for cash assistance program for very low-income families with minor children. It's called the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Program, or TANF. It's a program created by the mid-90s Clinton-era welfare reform. So, but the TANF program in Illinois, which is cash assistance to low-income parents and their children, or other people taking care of relatives, children, so an aunt or something like that. But if that household's income is over about, I'm going to say, 40% of the federal poverty level, mm-hmm. people are not ineligible for TANF. The eligibility threshold is so low in Illinois, and the grants are so low. A TANF grant to a family is less than the cash assistance that they receive per month, is less than 30% of the federal poverty level. Think about that for a while. So the fact that those families are under 100% of poverty, the fact that they're under 50% of poverty doesn't. So you have to be what I call desperately poor to get on TANF. That's something that needs addressing. There was a legislation passed by the General Assembly. This session will go into effect in July, which will say if you're under 50% of the federal poverty level, you'll be eligible for TANF. But I mean, so and maybe that's another takeaway from this is that while we talk about federal poverty levels, there's no assurance that there's assistance for everybody under that level.
We're going to have to stop. My apologies. I'm sure we can try to get onto some of these other these issues again in some other shows. There we'll have to leave it with our thanks to Margaret Stapleton. She is a senior attorney with the Shriver Center, the Shriver National Center on Poverty Law in Chicago. Ms. Stapleton, thanks very much.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight.
Today's program is made possible by the Courier Cafe, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day, whether it's almond French toast for breakfast, garden French salads and homemade soups for lunch, or burgers and hand-dipped shakes for dinner. The Courier Cafe in downtown Urbana has been offering fresh choices for 30 years. This is WILL. WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. That's it for us on Focus. Up next, the Afternoon Magazine and the host, Celeste Quinn.